experiencing preparing today's message. And if you're new to The Rock, maybe this is your first time, or you're watching online for the first time, and you're not familiar with The Royal is, it's actually the newest teaching series that we've been going through for the past several weeks, and it's all meant to help us understand God's Word a little bit better going through the biblical genres. And so we're in the fourth week, and the biblical genre that we've been studying is what? Do you guys know? Warriors, right? Which is a type of narrative. And so what I love about the narratives is that they've been teaching us or illustrating a bunch of doctrines and theology using, kind of revealing imperfect people and how God has brought them out of some kind of battle. And so they showed this video over the weekend, last night actually at the marriage retreat, where 600 people saw it, including Pastor Miles and Debbie, and there was an overwhelming response. And so I'm hoping that you came here this Sunday expecting to hear from God, that you didn't just come here out of habit, but I'm going to prepare you to get into a posture of actually hearing and feeling God move in your own life through a very familiar story, the David and Goliath story, but you're going to hear it in a very new way. So go ahead and prepare yourself and see what God has for you today.
It was something I had done very often, walk down to the bluff outside my apartment building to look at the ocean. But I didn't realize that on that night, fear would be brought into my life like I could never imagine.
One of the most powerful stories in the Bible is a story about David and Goliath. It took place in the Valley of Elah, a place just like this. There was a hill on one side with the Israelite army, a hill on the other side of a valley with the Philistine army, and in the middle was a valley. And every day for 40 days, Goliath, a 9-foot, 9-inch giant, came down and talked trash. And basically what he said was, if you could send a soldier out to fight me, if I beat him, you serve us. But if he beats me, our whole army will serve you. So every day he talked trash and no one went out to fight him. The Israelites were in desperate need of a giant killer. The reason this story is so powerful for us is because every day we have to decide, are we going to be a giant killer? We are always faced with obstacles bigger than we can handle. But the question is, are we going to let those obstacles defeat us, or will we be a giant killer and defeat it? We're going to look at four ways you can be a giant killer today.
Back in August of 1991, my friend and roommate Lori and I had some friends over. My boyfriend at the time, Dan and I wanted to go down to the bluff. I lived in Del Mar, and so we brought a blanket and some drinks and went down to the bluff. When we were there a little while talking, I heard something and I looked and saw a gun. And there was a masked gunman. He was wearing a ski mask and pointing a gun at us. And you know, obviously we were startled, and he almost politely said to us in a very low voice, got any car keys? And so we thought he just wanted to steal the car. So Dan immediately got up and took out his car keys and threw the car keys to him and started explaining where his car was. After a few minutes, he took the car keys and he said, I want you to go down the bluff right there. And it was really steep right there. No one ever went down there.
Whenever you read biblical narrative, it's important to follow the reading rules for biblical narrative. First, you got to identify the characters. You have God's friend, who is obviously David, and then you have Satan's friend, who opposes God's friend, and in this story, obviously Goliath. Then you have God and Satan in the background somewhere. Then you have to identify the plot, which is the tension between God's friend and Satan's friend. And this story is very simple. David and Goliath are going to fight to the death. Then you have plot resolution, where God, the hero, comes in and saves the day. And so in this story, it's very simple. David and Goliath are going to fight, and somehow God is going to intervene and save the day. But what's most important when you read narrative is to place yourself in the story. Are you David or are you Goliath? Are you the good guy or the bad guy? And if you're fighting your Goliath, which we're going to talk about today, you have to realize that God is going to be your hero. He is going to be the one to come in and save the day for you, as long as you're obedient. Today, we're going to talk about four habits of a giant killer, and I want you to keep these habits in mind as you think about your Goliath.
So Dan started to argue with him and said, you know, it's too steep there. We have to go down somewhere else. And when Dan said that, he went from being, you know, calm and polite to angry, and he started waving the gun around at us. And he then said, pick up those blankets. I don't want anyone knowing there was ever anyone here. And when he said that, I went into shock. And half of me wanted to just believe what he was saying, that if we just followed what he said, that we are going to be okay. The other half of me, you know, was thinking, well, am I going to die tonight? If he shoots me, I wonder if I'll roll backwards down the cliff. I wonder if he's going to wrap me up in the blanket and kill me. When the attacker had the gun and got angry and asked us to go down the cliff, that's when Dan realized he doesn't want to just steal the car. Something far worse is going to happen if we go down the cliff. That's when Dan whispered to me to run. And I was facing one way and I started walking quickly. And I heard a thud and I thought Dan had been shot. So I turned around and the attacker followed me. I didn't know why. I didn't know if he was following me to, you know, attack me, shoot me. So then I started running, and when I had started running, I realized I was running north into, you know, darkness on a dark path. And so I cut through an alley, and I came to a gated condominium complex. And when I went to the gate was locked. I said, God, please let the next gate not be locked. And so I ran to the next complex and got to the gate, and it wasn't locked. So when I ran up the steps, I just picked a door to pound on, and I was just pounding on one of the doors. And someone else opened another door and stuck their head out, and I just said, man with a gun. And he said, get inside. And so I ran inside, and his wife had heard the screaming, and she was already calling 911. When the sheriff arrived, they found Dan and the other men who were looking for me. After we described the attack to the sheriff let us know that it was a serial rapist. The serial rapist who had been on the loose had attacked us. And when I heard that we were attacked by a serial rapist, I immediately became afraid.
The first and probably most important habit of a giant killer is that they need to walk by faith, not by sight. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 24 to 26, the Bible tells us that all the men of Israel, when they saw the man Goliath, they fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So that men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. The soldiers were focused on what they saw and what they heard. But faith goes beyond the use of our senses. The Bible says in Hebrews 11:1 that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Hebrews 11:6 says we cannot please God except without faith. If you're going to be a giant killer, you're going to have to focus not on your fear, not on your doubt, but on your faith in God, and let God guide and direct how you confront your giant.
The thoughts in my mind at the time were, was this random? Had he been watching the apartment complex? Was he attacking me in particular? He wasn't caught that night, and he was still out there. So when I looked at anyone, you know, really anyone in particular, any man especially, you know, my mind was, are you the one? Are you the one? And sadly, what I lost was an innate sense of trust in people. So anyway, I found out that he had been caught by my boss at the time. And, you know, we went to the hearings. I testified before a grand jury and told the stories. But to hear the other people's stories, the women who were raped, children who were raped, the men who were shot, and to have him claim his innocence turned my frustration level into anger. And so eventually he did plead guilty. It may have been almost a year later, and he was sentenced. After that, though, I was still left with the fear that I felt, having been held up at gunpoint. I took all my knives, you know, from butter knives to large kitchen knives, and I used to roll them up in plastic bags and hide them under my bed at night so that, you know, if someone were to break into the house, they couldn't attack me with my own knife. You know, I had a lot of fear, some of it rational fear, some of it irrational fear, but, you know, I lived with fear since that day. In late 2008, I had been an attorney for about 12 years, a litigation attorney, and so a lot of hours, a lot of stress. At the end of 2008, I also had a rare physical reaction to the strep virus from having had scarlet fever when I was young. And so what that did to me is my body was basically under attack. I couldn't eat anything. I wasn't able to keep anything down. I lost over 15 pounds. And my whole system was off. And what it did to me was that it took the fear that I had from the, you know, from being attacked all the way back in 1991, and it took that fear and it exacerbated it. The fear grew exponentially, so that I now had irrational fear. I couldn't sleep at night. I could only sleep during the day. I couldn't work for a month. I was, you know, I wasn't eating. The economy had, you know, gone south. And Ted, my husband, went from a full-time job to becoming a consultant. I lost a portion of my salary, and I didn't have my health. We were in financial straits, and so that added even more stress to our lives. So hitting that point really made me just want to be better again, and I knew that only God could help me be better again.
The second habit of a successful giant killer is they realize that killing that giant is a purpose from God. In other words, God wants you to confront and destroy your giant. Let me give you some context. When David went out to the battlefield, he was going out to give his brothers some food. He had some brothers in the army, and they were part of the group that saw Goliath, heard Goliath, and ran from Goliath. But when David heard about Goliath, he believed in his heart that God would deliver him and use him to defeat Goliath. So he started telling everybody, "I'm going to kill Goliath, I'm going to kill Goliath." But David's older brothers, when they heard that their little baby brother was out there talking trash that he can defeat this big giant, they went up to him and started mocking him. They said, "Little David, you know, where's your little sheep? Why don't you go on home?" And David, because he knew that Goliath needed to be killed, he knew that there was a purpose from God. He says in 1 Samuel 17:29, "Is there not a cause?" And let me tell you, you confronting your giant, there is a purpose from God and a cause from God. Think about it. The devil wants to use Goliath in your life to destroy you. The devil wants to use Goliath in your life to prevent you from doing what God wants you to do. So either you destroy the giant, or the giant is going to destroy you.
Ted, my husband, got a new job working at The Rock. And after he started working at The Rock, he had let Miles know that I'm an attorney, and I started doing some work with Miles. And that really helped me. It really changed my outlook. The work that I have been doing for Miles has been a lot of fun, and it has been obviously very worthy work, and it helped me to get better. It helped me have a positive outlook. It helped me to start loving my job again. I started getting healthy again. And because I'm an attorney, Miles one day sent me an email, and he asked me if I would mind meeting with a friend of his who wanted to become an attorney, a young woman named Samantha, and she goes by Sammy. So I said, of course, anytime. And so Sammy and I got in contact. Sammy came to my office and we got along really well. I was amazed by Sammy because here she is finishing up her sophomore year as an undergrad and she already knows she wants to go to law school. So I was very impressed by her and we got along really well.
The third habit of a giant killer is that they have a transformational moment. There comes a time in their life when they decide, today, I'm gonna be a giant killer. Once the word got out in the camp that there was a kid walking around saying he can kill Goliath, King Saul said, I wanna meet this kid. And remember, the whole army was scared of Goliath. Every day for 40 days, Goliath came out talking trash. No one can whoop me, no one can whoop me. But then this little kid comes and says, I can whoop him, I can whoop him, I can take him out. And so there was a buzz through the camp and David's brothers got jealous, but everyone was talking about him. So the word got to King Saul, and King Saul said, I want to meet this kid. And they bring the kid into King Saul's tent, and David walks in with sheep fuzz all over his body, talking about, I can whoop the giant, just a little boy. And in chapter 17, verse 31, the Bible tells us about their conversation. It says, now when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul. He was the king. And Saul sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of Goliath. Your servant will go and fight the Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go fight the Philistine, for you are a kid or a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. So here's David claiming, I could whoop him. And the king has no faith in him. Let me tell you, when you confront your giants, there are going to be people all throughout your life who say, you can't, you can't, you can't. You're going to have voices in your head telling you, you can't, you can't, but you got to believe God by faith. And that's where David decided to step up. He says in verse 34, it's very powerful. This is one of the most powerful verses in the Bible to me. This is what he says. David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. Key word, used to. Let me read it again. Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. Now, why is that so critical? Because that very day, David was keeping his father's sheep. He walked in the king's tent rubbing, you know, pushing sheep fuzz off his body. And he has the nerve to say, I used to keep my father's sheep. Why is that important? Because David realized it was now time to grow up. He was going to go from being a shepherd to a giant killer. That was his transformational moment. Some point in your life, you have to decide, I'm not running anymore. I'm not going to be scared anymore. I am going to confront my giant, and I hope that day is today.
After about half an hour of just talking in my office, we went down to the deli at work in the building. And as we were chatting, out of the blue, Sammy let me know that she actually wanted to be a criminal prosecutor.
Leisha and I were having a conversation about schools and just about life in general, and I felt compelled. I felt this small voice come to me and say, it's okay, you can share, you know, what you've dealt with and what you've been through. And so I decided to tell her about my biological father and tell her who he was and what had happened and why I wanted to be an attorney and what was shaping me down towards that road.
And that made me feel bad for her. She said that he had been in jail since she was, you know, 1 or 2 years old. And then she said, actually, he's a former policeman who went around attacking people at night. And when she said that, I was pretty floored. And I asked her what his name was. And when she told me, here she was the daughter of my attacker. And so when she told me that, all I could do was give her a hug and tell her, God bless you. Because here she was, this amazing girl who didn't grow up with her dad. He had been in jail during her whole life. She had never spoken with him since she was a baby. And I didn't have that pain in my life. And so God turned something in my life that was painful, but more fearful, and took something that, you know, I would try to hold back and not remember, or remember with fear, or remember with anger. And he turned it into something that was full of hope and something that I can smile about when I think of Sammy.
I definitely felt that it was God speaking to me and allowing me to open up to her, because it's not something that I tell, you know, everyday people. I just felt this connection with her and that I felt she would understand, and I just was blown away and I couldn't believe that we were here together in that moment.
The fourth and final habit of a giant killer is that they realize and recognize the hand of God in their life. Once the word got out in the camp that there was this kid who was saying he can kill Goliath, King Saul said, come on in, I want to see him. So he looks at this little kid, little David, and says, man, there's no way you're going to kill this giant. And David starts telling him all these reasons why he believed he can kill Goliath. And I want to read to you what David said, because it's critical for you to understand God's hand, not only in David's life, but in your life. 1 Samuel 17, verse 34. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went after it, struck it, and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion. Let me read it again. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Basically, what David was saying was when he was out tending his sheep, if a lion or a bear came, he would pick up his sheep and start walking away. And when it came after him, he would turn around, put a sheep down and knock it out. David was a bad brother, but he trusted in God. He said, the Lord delivered him from the paw of the lion, and the Lord delivered him from the paw of the bear. Remember, biblical narrative. God is always the hero. Your life is a biblical narrative. And in every conflict you're going to have, and every time you face a Goliath, it's going to be God who's going to be your hero. He is going to be the one. If you look back in your life, you know he's delivered you from many Goliaths in the past, so why wouldn't he deliver you again?
My mom and I were going through a little bit of a difficult time, so we decided to go see my grandpa, who's buried in Fort Rosecrans, which is in Point Loma. And on our way back, we were driving by and we saw this huge building, and we saw that it said The Rock. And I said, hey, Mom, that's that church I've been wanting to go to. And she said, okay, so
let's... No, I didn't say okay. I said, no. We've been raised Catholic all the way up the food chain, grade school, high school. Sammy went to Catholic grade school. And I am like, there is no way in heck that I'm going into a church that says The Rock. It doesn't have a cross on top of it. It's just not what I'm used to.
But since she's like, well, we're going through a hard time, so maybe we could try something new. So we ran home and looked online and saw that there was a 7 o'clock service that we would be able to go to.
And so I'm yelling at Sammy, okay, we have like 20 minutes to get there, so shower, get done, get in the car, and we drive back. So we start walking into the building, and we're getting ready to enter the sanctuary of the church, and we get handed a bulletin. And so we go and we sit down, and you know, there's music and worship, and I'm looking at Sammy like what are we doing here? This is really foreign to me. And service continues, and we sit down, and all of a sudden I open up the bulletin, and I see a picture, and I see a name, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And I said, Sammy, I said, this is Miles McPherson.
And Sammy's looking at me like,
who is this? I don't know what you're talking about. Like, who is this guy?
Yeah, and I said, Sam, he visited your biological father when he was in jail, when he was arrested.
I remember when the rapes were happening and then San Diego was just, you know, gripped with fear, paralyzed. When I was a kid living in New York, the Son of Sam murders were happening and the whole New York City was paralyzed. Same type of thing was happening here in San Diego. And then they caught the guy and they realized he was a cop. That's how he was getting away, raping all these people, not getting caught. And then I was called to go visit his wife. Her name was Karen. And I remember what a big honor that was. I was only 31 years old. And I remember walking in the house and Karen was in there and I was walking towards the living room and I saw this picture of this little girl. She was brown skin, jet black hair, this big, gigantic white dress. She was only about one, maybe one. And my heart broke thinking that this guy is out there raping all these women. Not only does he have a wife at home, but he's got a little girl. So my wife and I met with Karen for a few months. We had a very short relationship, and then we lost touch. About 12 years after I met Karen, my wife and I and our daughter was at San Diego State. We were in a volleyball tournament, and we saw Karen and the little baby. The little baby's girl's name was Samantha, and she was now 12 years old. And I flashed back to all the memories of the trial and seeing her picture when she was one or barely one, and now she's 12. And I wanted so bad to talk to her and ask her how life had been and kind of get to know her, but it was a very short meeting. We hugged and with her mom and talked very briefly. And I remember Samantha just standing in the background all quiet. She had no idea who we were. And we lost touch again and didn't see her for another 6 years until the famous meeting at the church.
Service ended and I just kind of looked at my mom. We were in awe of what we had just witnessed. And
so I'm like, Sam, you know, let's go down and let's wait for Pastor Miles to be finished. So as we start getting closer and he's speaking with, you know, other church members, and he starts looking at us.
And we could see out of the corner of his eye, I was like, oh, maybe he recognizes us, you know. Wow, I was a little surprised. And he kept looking, and then he would finish talking with someone, and then he would look at us again, and then...
It's finally our turn, and so I went up to him, and I said, you know, Miles, you visited my ex-husband in prison.
And he just, the look on his face, he was so surprised, and he just grabbed me and gave me a huge hug and said, I'm your Uncle Miles, you need to meet my family, I've got to introduce you, and, you know, I'm really glad that you guys are here at the church.
I remember standing next to the stage after service one day. We had just moved into our new building, we'd been in there a couple of months, and all of a sudden, there's Karen again. Again, I hadn't seen her in 6 years, met her 18 years before. And right behind her was the little girl in the dress, but now she's 18. Sammy was 18 years old. And again, she was standing behind her mom all quiet. And again, I never met this girl. I just seen pictures of her and just saw her when she was 12. And now she's in my church. I'm thinking, how did she get here? And she was crying. Her mom told me about some stuff she was going through. And I started thinking about all this girl had been through. And my heart just broke again. I said, look, you're now my niece. I'm Uncle Miles. And I need to introduce you to my daughter, my son, and all their friends, because she needed to get a new group of friends. And that started a relationship that is now very powerful. She's over my house all the time, eating my food. I don't know how that happened, but the next thing I knew, my son has taken her everywhere. And they had that look in their eye, and God had done something to them, and now they're engaged. I want you to remember that in every narrative, God is the hero. So in the David and Goliath story, of course, God is the hero. He guides David's rock into Goliath's head, kills Goliath. In Leisha's story, God is the hero on many levels, but I just want to show you one example. Just think about it. Leisha is attacked. Several days later, the attacker is caught. Several days later, I meet the wife of the attacker and see a picture of a little girl who's barely 1 year old. And 20 years later, that little girl in that picture is now having a relationship with the woman her dad tried to rape. 20 years later, God is using that little girl to heal this woman's wounds.
When everything first came down in 91, when my ex-husband was arrested, you know, at first you had to look internally and think why. And it just so shocked me and astounded me that, you know, through God's grace, Sammy was able to meet one of his victims, and that, you know, here's Leisha, who turned out to be this wonderful human being and was able to work through the past and accept my daughter for who my daughter is and not the actions of her biological father. To me, is God's hand written all over this.
It's really difficult to think about sometimes. I think about everything that my mom went through, and I was only a year and a half, so I'm here to support her now, but I wasn't then, and sometimes you just wonder, why me, and why did this happen? Why did this have to happen to our family? But at the same time, I can see why, because I was able to meet Leisha and be able to heal her pain as well as heal mine, and I think help my mom as well move through it, because it is overwhelming, and it's not something that you just talk about at the dinner table.
And, you know, while we've had a tragic set of circumstances, God has been there, and he's, you know, he's looking out for us,
And sometimes it's hard to see that, but the enormity of the situation and, you know, just the giant way that it evolved in our lives and how we've been working through it, to me, is a testimony to God.
That's amazing to me how God worked in Ted's life and Miles' life and Sammy's life and my life to bring us together to a place where I could find healing, Sammy could find healing, and then Sammy and I could together help each other heal.
God set in motion the details and the steps for Leisha to become a giant killer 20 years before it happened. You need to know right now, as you sit there, whatever Goliath you're facing, God has long ago set in motion a process for you to be a giant killer. He's been working on your solution. He's been working and waiting to be your hero, but you have to exercise faith. You have to believe He loves you and knows you and has a plan already in place for you to defeat your Goliath. You also have to understand that you defeating your Goliath is part of His purpose for your life. It's going to be a very growing experience for you. It's going to be a transformational moment. There's going to come a time in your life where you're going to have to say, I am going to confront my giant. I am going to trust God. And finally, keep in mind all the times He has gotten you through your problems. So right now, I'm going to ask you to bow your heads and pray. Wherever you are, if you're in Point Loma, if you're at North County, if you're watching online, wherever you are, bow your heads and pray. And I want you to think about this. You have a Goliath. You need to be a giant killer. You need to confront your giant today. Allow God to be the hero that He always is, that He always has been, and that He always will be. So bow your heads and pray with me, and then we're going to have an opportunity to walk away from your old self so you can truly say, like David said, I used to keep sheep. I used to be scared. I used to run from my Goliath. But now you're going to run towards your Goliath and slay him. So bow your heads and pray. Lord, I thank you so much for all these people who are watching and listening, wherever they are. I thank you that you are their hero. You are the one who's going to get them over their obstacles, through their problems. You are going to slay the giants in their life, but they must trust you. So as you sit there, if you're saying, yes, I want to be transformed into a giant killer, pray this prayer with me. In the privacy of your heart, pray, dear God, I know you love me, and I know I have a Goliath I need to slay. And I know I can't do it without you. So God, I ask you to forgive me of my doubt. Forgive me for not trusting you. I surrender my life and my burden to you. And I ask you to guide me and direct me as I confront the Goliath in my life. Jesus, I surrender my life to you. Empower me to be the person you want me to be. As your eyes are closed and your heads are bowed right now, in a minute, I'm going to ask you to stand up. And by standing up, you are taking your first step to confronting your Goliath. Whether you're in Point Loma, whether you're at North County, or if you're at home, I want you to stand up. And if you're in those churches or a church somewhere, there's going to be someone there to pray with you. So right now, if you pray that prayer and you're saying, yes, God, I want to be transformed into a giant killer, I want you to stand up, eyes closed, heads bowed. I want you to stand up right now. God bless you. There's people there who see you. God bless you. There are people there who are going to pray with you. God bless you. God bless you. We see you. Go ahead and stand up. We're going to wait a minute. Turn, make a decision to be transformed into a giant killer today. God bless you. God bless you. Right now, I'm going to ask all you who are standing, you're going to step out of your seat, you're going to walk down to the altar. There are people there who want to pray with you, and you're going to become a giant killer today, and you are going to confront your giant and defeat your giant. God bless you. God bless you. If you prayed that prayer, I want to challenge you today to get someone that can partner with you, that can walk with you in your process, that you would defeat your giant. God bless you.
Give it up to the Lord, please. Give it up for the people that are coming forward as well. It's always amazing to see people come forward. This isn't just an ordinary thing, guys. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. Please help them out. I don't think even I was prepared for that. Like, I didn't have any Kleenex in my pocket. And I think one of the most moving things about that story is how we see God take people from a place of despair, from a place of brokenness, from a place of darkness, and how God still moves them towards a place of healing and restoration in that narrative. And he still promises that today, amen? He still offers that to us today. And one of the things that I think stuck out.